This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Hoffman, and it is once again time for what for many of you is your favorite episode of Intelligent Medicine. You know, we do great interviews with distinguished guests all the time, and we do clinical focus podcasts uniquely focusing on specific issues, health problems, nutrients, various types of health strategies. But today it's time for your questions. It's Q&A with Layla, with our Hoffman Center nutritionist, Layla Mudin. She's a registered dietitian. She's also earned a master's degree in the field of nutrition. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thanks. And so the way that it works is you email us your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And if your question is succinct, to the point, and of general interest, we'll read it on the air, and we'll endeavor to answer it to the best of our abilities in a team fashion, the way we do it at the Hoffman Center. Each patient at the Hoffman Center gets seen by me and by our Hoffman Center nutritionist, Layla Mudin, and we work out their problems both medically and nutritionally to come up with answers. So just like a day in the office, right? You know, it's kind of what we do.
Yep, that's what we do.
Okay. Yeah. So before we get to our questions, this week has been very exciting on the interview side. We did some great podcasts. So we interviewed last week Dr. Benjamin Brown, who has written a wonderful book on IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Now, you know, maybe not such an appetizing subject, but hey, guess what? Mm-hmm. You know, 50, 60, 70 million Americans suffer from one form or another of IBS with unsatisfactory digestion, gas, bloating, indigestion, cramps, diarrhea, or constipation, sometimes both simultaneously, and they don't have a specific disease entity. And basically, they're told that, maybe it's nervousness or something you have to live with. And there's not a lot of answers. And he just breaks it down beautifully in his book. So we had a great conversation. I spoke to him directly to him in his office in London. And that was a great podcast. So also we talked to Dana Ullman on the subject of homeopathy under attack as, effort to regulate it, perhaps ban homeopathic remedies, perhaps make them available prescription only. So we had a great conversation on that. And also a wonderful interview with a guy who's written a great book. I recommend it very highly. And it's called The Dorito Effect. It's the author is Mark Schatzker, and he's an investigative journalist. And he's really put together a very, very excellent book on the subject of how we got to the problem of obesity in America via the synthetic foods and food additives and the agribusiness, conspiring with the food industry to make ever more succulent, delicious foods at the same time that our regular foods become blander and blander due to agricultural processing and so on. So that's the lineup, and it's been a great lineup. So I encourage you to listen to those podcasts. And by the way, that's a good tie-in to something that we're about to do because a lot of you are excited about all the resources that we have at Intelligent Medicine. We have podcasts. I post on Facebook and Twitter, and you can listen to my weekday radio program wherever you are across the country, or you can listen to the podcast of that radio program. And we have great articles, and we have a newsletter, so lots of information. But people have been complaining, and why have they been complaining, Layla? Because they're
complaining because we haven't been doing lectures, or they're not in the New York area. They're not able to get here. So yay! Now we're doing webinars.
Right. So we're reviving that Hoffman Center lecture series, which for some people that's great. It's convenient. They can you know, they're close by. They can come into Manhattan and they can come to our office. We have a wonderful lecture space where you can see us live. And we make this available free to our patients, and there's a small fee for non-patients, as before. And the new innovation is that we're videotaping it so that you can now download it from our website. So that's give us the details on that.
Yeah, you'll be able to download it from our website once we post it, but the webinar will be held on Wednesday, June 24th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And we hope to see you there. Now, because we have limited seating, reservations are a must, so I would encourage anyone who wants to reserve a seat to call 212-779-1744.
Okay. And yeah. What's the subject going to be? And that was the lead-in Mark Schatzker's book, The Dorito Effect.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be the end of overeating and food addiction. All about craving, how to deal with craving. And as you were saying, Dr. Hoffman, earlier about how the food industry, agribusiness, have made foods hyperpalatable, so we do become addicted to some degree. So how to deal with that?
Right. So there's really going to be some interesting new information there. We're now doing genetic testing to determine people's likelihood of food addiction, what we call disinhibition. We'll talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about, it's not enough to just hand out copies of the salad and salmon diet. If everybody just, follow that strictly, no problem.
Yeah.
No problems in implementation.
Right.
But both physical cravings and psychological dependency cause people to break their resolve. And there's many issues involved. There's sleep is a factor in, very important influence on dieting. Exercise, and we're going to look at all those factors. So, if you have failed repeatedly in implementing a healthy diet, you want to get in a healthy program and you want to lose weight, this is a must, because we're really going to try and bring up your consciousness about some of the less well-known impediments to dietary resolve and some strategies. We're going to work with strategies to help people overcome
it. So for those of you who believe there are certain foods you can't live without, or you feel euphoric or calm or happy or sleepy after eating a certain food that you crave, or maybe you feel worse after eating the foods that you crave, or you're eating or craving foods you never did before, that's what this seminar is going to be about.
Right. So we'll have some really cutting-edge information. I'm very excited about it. And we use a team teaching approach. So Layla and I will present together. We're kind of like Penn and Teller, except I talk. Okay. So we'll do a exciting seminar. And you can attend on June 24th, or shortly thereafter we'll post a link so that you can listen to the webinar. Not only listen, but watch the webinar. You'll see us in action. You'll see the slides of our presentation. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to that very much. All right.
Yeah.
Let's get right down to questions.
Yeah, our first question comes from Don. Dr. Hoffman, thank you for your radio program, your podcast. I'm an 84-year-old widower with just some minor issues of blood pressure, diabetes.
Who uses the internet?
Water.
Kudos to him. He uses the internet, and he's emailing us.
God bless.
Great. That's great.
Well, he's been reading a lot in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, Prevention Magazine, that it's appropriate to have a goal of living well to 100 years old. Do you think I can get there?
Theoretically, yes. And in fact, what we're seeing is a real change in our demographic. I mean, it used to be a real rarity. I don't know if years ago when you used to watch the Today Show, they used to do like a congratulatory thing to people turning 100 or over 100. What's his name? What was the name of the guy who used to do that on Today Show? It was kind of the jolly weatherman.
I don't know.
I'll remember his name in a minute.
Okay.
So that used to be kind of an exceptional thing. Mm-hmm. Now it is a very significant demographic. There's going to be many tens of thousands and perhaps hundreds of thousands of people, even maybe hitting the million mark of people who reach 100 because of, perhaps healthier lifestyle, also medical advances that enable people to live longer. And of course, you know, and I think that you know, supplementation plays no small role in that. That, you know, let's
absolutely,
you know, let's take some credit for that. Because I mean, looks, mm-hmm. they keep talking about how supplements are bad for you, they kill you, and yet we're seeing, you know, real changes in our longevity. So not that people couldn't live to 100, you know, in the 1700s, but this is a true rarity then, and now it's become a commonplace.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, I mean, I think the other consideration is, you know, whether or not you live long, you know, how do you live? Because we can sustain life well into the 90s and beyond, but mm-hmm. at what price are people going to be, you know, sick and debilitated on multiple medications, institutionalized, demented? That's no way to live. So we, you know, I like to promise people longevity, but I'm more interested in what we call squaring off the aging curve, which means you live long and healthy to your appointed, programmed, shall we say, demise. Because I think there's some programming involved, genetic programming, that the body kind of goes kaput at a certain point and it just runs out of longevity capacity. But then you have a great good quality of life, and then you drop off gradually. I mean, you drop off, so, shall we say, relatively rapidly without a long, a grinding period of debilitation and hospitalization and so on. I think that's really our current goal.
I think the best ways Don can, you know, live to 100 or is to live the life, a good, clean life, good, healthy eating, physical activity, social support, and supplements, but really particular supplements. I mean, a good, well-balanced multi. I think everybody should be taking fish oil, magnesium, CoQ10, because a lot of these are depleted when taking certain medications. He's got blood pressure, he's got diabetes, he's got atrial flutter. I imagine some of his medications are causing depletions in certain nutrients, so it would be good to take some.
Another way of saying this
and,
is that everyone's pathway to 100, you know, has to be individualized. Yeah. It may be that your particular Achilles heel when it comes to longevity is the risk of stroke, or it may be that your particular risk is that you have a high propensity towards cancer. And we're beginning to get really nice data on early prediction with some genetic testing. That's new at the Hoffman Center and other practices that are beginning to adopt it. And with greater precision, we can sort of head off problems before they develop. You know, there's going to be some speed bumps on the way to 100. So you kind of have to grab on and hold tight.
That's it.
Right.
Best of luck, Don.
But on the mental engagement part, hey, there's nothing better than you know, being engaged in, you know, some of the modern media that are out there. You know, not mm-hmm. the point of obsessing and staying inside all the time and, you know, just reading a nonsensical cat video on Facebook. You know, it's
the
real
dumbing down of America, but that's another topic. Okay.
It can be a time suck, but also can be mentally engaging for seniors to be involved in that. So I always feel bad for seniors who are, you know, perhaps in their 70s and, I can't listen to your podcast, Dr. Hoffman, because I don't use my computer very much, or I don't have a computer, or I have one of those phones that's not a smartphone. You know, just it calls 911 and my kids, and you know, that's about it.
That's isolation to some degree.
Yeah, it's almost like when people get deaf, they become socially isolated, and I think that there's actually an equivalent when you become media. You kind of lose traction on some of the outlets that are available mm-hmm. culturally. You know, intellectually via the media, which is really the way that a lot of this information is delivered. This is almost like acquiring a form of age-related deafness, but it's a deafness to the wealth of information that's at your disposal out there.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Hope you're listening, Don.
Yeah.
Okay. Our next question comes from Tim, and his question is, are carbohydrates really evil? I think the excess of any of the three macronutrients we eat, proteins, fats, and carbs, will cause weight gain. And you can't just blame carbs only. I've known many people that get fat because of fried foods or peanut butter, too. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true, Tim. It's absolutely true. At the end of the day, you can be on any diet you want, but if you go over a particular amount of calories for your metabolism and you do this on a daily basis, weight gain will occur, whether they're fat calories, whether they're protein calories, or whether they're carbohydrate calories. But wait a minute. I've said before that protein and fat calories will tend to burn as energy, and carb calories will tend to sit on us as fat. However, if you go into the caloric stratosphere, all of it is going to sit. We're all going to gain weight. So that's really the way it works. At the end of the day, it is about the calories. It is true that on a lower carb diet, you can eat maybe a couple of hundred more calories, even up to 500 or 700, one study found, especially amongst younger people. But again, at the end of the day, you don't want to overdo your calories, otherwise it's weight gain.
But doesn't it depend on your genetics you find? Because we have some patients on ultra-low ultra-low-carb diets, and we utilize the Atkins principle, whereby we allow them more freedom to select healthy fats and protein, but we dramatically restrict their carbs, and they're able to lose weight because they're the ones who are metabolic syndrome, insulin resistant. And I believe that there are some people who actually have a minimal amount of that. I believe personally, you know, from the testing that I've done on myself, that I don't really have that either genetically or per my lifestyle, which is, you know, fairly high energy lifestyle with a lot of exercise. And there's nobody in my family that I know of who's diabetic, so probably I didn't inherit a strong propensity to that.
Terrific.
And but there, for some people, there's their family tree is riddled with diabetics and obesity, and they also have that sort of, you know, carbohydrates have to be restricted because, well, we'll talk about in our upcoming seminar, because they have such an addictive quality for them that it's almost like they need to go AA on that, you know, like Alcoholics Anonymous, like abstinence, because once they start,
it's carboholism.
They're off to the races, you know, they're just off to the races. So this is merely a strategy that we use sometimes. And, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, to get to Tim's point, let me give an example. I remember having a patient back when I was working with Dr. Atkins, and he was morbidly obese. And I remember putting him on the diet and him coming back and coming back, and the weight is not budging. And upon further investigation, guess what? You're not supposed to have a 22-ounce steak for dinner. That right there is 1,500 to 1,700 calories.
Right.
And that was only dinner.
Right.
So imagine, again, at the end of the day, the calories. Did he need a 22-ounce steak? No, he probably could have done just fine with an 8 to a 12-ounce steak or so, because he was a pretty big man. But this is what I'm talking about when it comes down to a low-carb diet. The people who aren't losing are doing it wrong, or they're just completely overdoing their calories.
Right. So on the one hand, you know, we'll have Dean Ornish, who says, you know, eat you know, lots of whole grains and vegetables and no animal protein and very little fat. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have the people who say, you know, get on a ketogenic diet, have virtually no carbohydrates, turn yourself into, you know, get into like a ketogenic mode where you're burning down your fat stores. And these approaches, you know, both can claim successes, but also both are prone to failure. So I think any diet discussion that says that one diet predominates over all others is doomed to failure. On the other hand, you know, we frequently invoke the low carb diet, but
because it works best.
But we individualize.
Yeah, we do absolutely individualize it. Yes.
Right, and genetic testing is actually beginning, and we're just dipping our toe into the science of what's called nutrigenomics, which has some predictive value for what type of diet is going to work best for different people. So it might be a Mediterranean diet, like a salad and salmon diet with whole grains, not a lot of flour products, but some, you know, fair amount of carbs. Mm-hmm. It might be you know, very low fat diet, or it might be a very low carb diet, that is most suitable based on a complex array of genes. And, you know, we look at the test results. The test results are sometimes determined by, you know, 18, 20 or more genes. And, you know, that's like that. There's so many interactions between these genes that yeah. you really need a supercomputer to crunch that information.
Yeah. So the genetic testing, looking at individual biochemistries, taking into account the person's lifestyle, are they athletic?
Glucose tolerance test, very, very key test.
Glucose tolerance test,
That's a really important test for discriminating carbohydrate sensitivity, and we use that frequently.
I think everybody should have a glucose tolerance test, at least after a certain age.
Yep.
Because, you know, doctors continue just checking a fasting blood sugar and say, oh, you're not diabetic, you're fine, go home. But a fasting
as long as it's under 120, it's fine. Yeah.
Right. But it could be in the normal range. But guess what? We need to see how your body actually deals with a carbohydrate challenge, with a glucose challenge. So,
correct.
It's important information.
Good. All right. Yeah. So we have time for another question in this segment. We divide these podcasts into two parts. So let's field another question, and then
okay.
we'll move on to part two.
We've got a question from Mary. Dear Dr. Hoffman, what do you think of all the hype about coconut oil? And how many tablespoons a day should I have for that matter? And will it really curb my appetite?
It's not hype.
Well, it's not hype. It's not hype. Mary, yes, incorporating coconut oil into your daily diet is actually a good idea. Coconut oil is a medium-chain triglyceride. It's used directly for energy. It actually puts the body into a fat-burning mode called ketosis for a little while until it's burned up, if you're not already in ketosis, I mean. So having a tablespoon or two of coconut oil, cooking with it, putting in something like your coffee, you can make bulletproof coffee or bulletproof tea for that matter, or just putting it in a smoothie is good. Coconut oil also has antimicrobial properties. The lauric acid, the saturated fat called lauric acid, becomes monolaurin in the body, and this has antiviral, antibacterial. There's a whole lot of good to monolaurin in the body, and it's especially good during cold and flu season, but now that we're not even there anymore, it's good everywhere. I keep a jar of coconut oil in the kitchen and another one in the bathroom for
yes.
moisturizing.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
You know, I do too. What I do is my shaving routine is I'll take the jar of coconut oil, put it under hot water to melt it, then apply it to my face. Then I apply the shaving cream. I get a really close shave. And then I apply some Manuka cream.
Manuka.
Right.
Yeah.
Which for the listening, some people are inquiring, it's temporarily not available. They're sort of rejiggering their production facility, and it will be made available soon. But it's actually one of our most popular products at drhoffman.com. So the other, and of course, I keep some in the kitchen, and it's really good in a smoothie because when you add a tablespoon,
coconut oil.
Coconut oil.
Coconut
not
oil
shaving cream
it, yeah.
and not Manuka. Wait, don't get confused. don't put the shaving cream in. It's really good in a smoothie, the coconut oil, because it makes it creamier. And it also,
yes.
see, what you want in a smoothie is a lot of people have smoothies that are either just protein, okay, that's not really enough, or they're really very carby. They put a lot of juice and fruit in there, and it's like very carby. And what you need is you need some fat, because the fat will slow its release into your system so that you don't get hit up with really a high sugar high immediately. And so you really want that. In your smoothie, you want maybe some carbs, maybe some fresh fruit, some protein powder of a suitable kind, and some oil, which it could be. I also put like a half an avocado sometimes in that because the avocado
that
is fatty.
That makes it creamy.
That makes it creamy.
That's nice.
That's
and creamy.
Beautiful. And some people think, ugh,
putting
avocado.
Fats in
it's
a
good.
Smoothie. Putting fats in a smoothie is a good thing because it can help with the absorption of the carotenoids.
Yes.
In many of the vegetables and things. So some of these are fat-soluble nutrients, so it's important to have some fat.
By the way, our take on smoothies is, you know, we're okay occasionally, but we'd rather not have people drink liquid meals because it is a little artificial. I mean, the ingredients are not, I mean, the powder is sort of dried, desiccated powder. And a smoothie goes too quickly into your stomach and into your gastrointestinal tract. So it kind of releases its nutrients sometimes a little too quickly. You kind of get a blood sugar spike. And food is the best way to go. But if you're in a hurry, sometimes I have 10 minutes before I have to, get to the office, and it'll be like, okay, I want to get something in my system before I see, a bunch of patients, and I don't want to be brain dead. So I'll have a quick smoothie on the way to the office, and that'll do the trick.
Yeah, that does it.
Right.
Thank you for your question, Mary.
Great. Throw some flaxseed in, too. That's good.
A great idea.
All right, so let's break. What we do is we divide these podcasts into two parts. So in part two, give us a preview, Layla, of what we're going to be addressing in part two.
Help. I'm waking up hungry at 3 in the morning.
Whoa. All right. Mm. Help is on the way. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today it's Q&A with Layla. Send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Get them answered on this podcast. And stay tuned for part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is Intelligent Medicine.